Hello there, and welcome to Radio Free Nintendo. This is episode 126, or something like that, and you may have noticed this is not Jonathan Metz, because he, as he has alluded to in the past, is away discovering the remains of planet Krypton, or something like that, I don't know.
Alabama. It's in Alabama.
It is, yeah. FYI. Everybody rush there right now.
Damn, the Yankees are back!
Man, we got some Krypton!
They're gonna think the Great War started again. War of Northern, yeah, I believe the War of Northern Aggression has started anew with this rush of this onset of these
this
damn
time,
Yankees.
Thanks to this Krypton, we will rise again.
Yes, there's that's got one for jingoism there.
Ding. Anyway,
we're pleased to have, though, in Johnny's absence, this is Greg, your host. We've still got my long-time compatriots, John and James.
Whoop, whoop.
Long-suffering.
If you want to put it that way. But glad to have Nick back with us. Nick DeMola, how you doing, Nick?
How's it going, guys?
Good to have you with us. And as is customary these days, you get to kick off new business, so have at it.
All right, fair enough. Well, before I even start, I want to do a little pimping here. You guys need to go listen to the Persona 3 podcast. I demand it.
it's on the blog, and we understand that, you know, if this show keeps going downhill, you're just going to do a weekly Persona podcast.
Well, there's enough content. I just cover an hour a day.
But yeah, it's on the staff blog. If anyone's wondering where it is, it's relatively hidden.
But anyway, yeah, on to more non-Nintendo business. I've actually been playing an Xbox 360 game lately, surprisingly enough. And that game would be Banjo-Kazooie Nuts and Bolts. So yeah, that guy has been getting a little bit of a criticism, it seems. I guess people can't really make heads or tails on whether they like it or not. Personally, I am liking it, like, a whole lot. More or less, it's kind of like it's like a big kid's Legos or Kinects, or at least that's how I kind of equate it. You know, you could build cars, boats, planes, and it's all pretty pretty simple through the workshop in the game. And it's really, I mean, it doesn't really have any resemblance at all to the old Banjo-Kazooie games, but
it's mostly sort of superficial stuff, like, yeah, you still get jiggies for completing things, but,
sure,
you know, the actual tasks and gameplay involved is totally different.
Right, yeah, the gameplay, utterly different, and, I mean, the nice thing that's carried over is the personality and the characters, so you still have, you know, the humor and the, you know, Grunty's odd rhyming remarks going on in the background and all that junk, but more or less it's... It's a good game. I mean, I think it's a good game. The challenges are not particularly varied, but they're varied enough to require constant building of different vehicles. And I think that's the real meat of the game right there. Some people, I think even Chris Kohler, kind of panned the unchanging challenges. And I could kind of understand that point, but if you didn't attach yourself to the building component of the game, it doesn't really matter. I mean, that's the part you're either going to like or you're going to hate. So if you find yourself attracted to...
So do you think the game does an adequate job of encouraging you to really experiment with it, or does it kind of leave it as a kind of take-it-or-leave-it proposition, and you're either going to find your way into this yourself or not? I mean, how do you think it does that?
I'd say the challenges are pretty... They'll challenge you to actually build vehicles that are worthwhile, but I don't know. If you find building stuff not interesting, you're just not interested. That's really all it comes down to.
And there's not that much that can do to make you interested.
Right.
It's kind of whether you are or you aren't, you think.
Exactly. It's a take it or leave it kind of thing. And I think that's why the reviews are so across the board. Some people are into that.
I mean, do you think, you're a big fan of Banjo-Kazooie.
Sure.
And I assume you enjoy, like you said, the sort of the veneer of Banjo-Kazooie, some of the charm and things. but do you think it's best served by actually having that IP attached to it, or could they? Do you think, especially, so they've ended up selling it at a budget price, so it doesn't seem like they've just sort of, you know, it seems a weird thing when you're sort of putting an established IP on something to then go and sell it for cheap.
Yeah.
Do you think it might have been better building something more, you know, with its own identity?
I think it would have, actually. The more I play it, I mean, it really, when you start the game, like, you're transported into a totally different world. So it's not even like drawing off of the areas or the setting of the other game. It's set past both the other games, and it's like a side quest almost. So it seems like it was kind of a cash-in, but I don't really know if fans kind of identified with that. I think more people are pissed off that they use the characters to do something totally different rather than just create something new. I mean, I think that they could have created an entirely new cast of characters, kept the same charm and personality, bright graphics, all of that, and still been moderately successful with it. So, yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Okay, I suppose Banjo fans do get the XBLA version of the original. They want to go back and play that, is that something you've done?
Actually,
replay through that game.
Last night I finished it up. I got all the achievements, which is not something I normally do. But the port is kind of craptastic. It's
really.
It looks great, and they did some cool stuff. Like when you go back into the levels, if you die after you collected like 50 notes, you don't have to collect all of them all over again. But it has like slowdown everywhere. It's worse than the 64 game. It's unbelievable.
Really? Well, I suppose you have played it recently enough to actually make that comparison as well, haven't you?
Yep, I mean, I've just played it maybe 3 months ago, so it's awful.
Sure.
There are parts
that's quite shocking.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. I don't know how they managed to screw that one up, but yeah. I wouldn't spend $15 on it. I mean, if that's your only capacity of playing the game and you're really interested, go for it, but
okay.
Yeah, don't go out of your way. So
that's quite. I understand. Did you pick up Wii Speak? I understand. Do you have anything to say about that at all?
Yeah, I did pick up Wii Speak. It's surprisingly well done. I think the actual peripheral is pretty good at picking up sound even from across the room and for multiple people. And the Wii Speak channel is actually pretty nice. You can send messages and stuff, and there's like some voice modifiers, things like that, and that's pretty interesting.
Oh, right. So it's sort of like the equivalent of the DSi photo tomfoolery.
Exactly.
There's one good thing that's come out of the fact that is that we know now it's definitely just uses your Wii message board friends, right?
Yes.
So there's no extra friends for the Wii Speak channel. Nope. That's good, because Nintendo of Europe's press releases routinely refer to it as using private friend codes, and like friend codes have always been 12 digit things attached to games, rather than like the Wii number's 16 digits and it's called the Wii number. So
right.
I was worried for a minute, but it seems like they just got confused about semantics over there.
Yeah, and it seems like it actually, if you click on a friend that's on your message board through the Wii Speak channel, it'll actually figure out whether or not they have Wii Speak. So it's even better than just the message board friends. So
That's pretty good, actually.
And hopefully we'll get more games actually make use of it, kind of as we touched on just a couple episodes ago. Okay, Nick, thanks for that. John, you're up next. What do you got?
Yeah, I got my review copy of Age of Empires Mythologies for the DS. And, you know, I mean, for anybody that played the first Age of Empires on DS, they'll pretty much know what to expect. It's kind of a, like, isometric strategy. You know, and the only problem, I mean, it's pretty good so far. The only problem I have is that the stylus control isn't as pinpoint as I would like when you're moving around. Like when you select, you know, like your soldiers and stuff. It's kind of strange. You have to tap on the guy and then tap on him again and then move him. It's kind of weird.
I've never really got on with stylus control. Advance Wars, I've never wanted to use the stylus to direct my units. I've always just clicked along the grid with the D-pad and buttons. I don't know whether anybody else has any feelings on that.
Well, it's just weird because it just seems like it's not straight grid based. I mean, because the grid is on an angle, right? I mean, it is grid based, but I'm just saying, like, it's not like you're sitting there looking at, like,
Like you said, sort of isometric, so
yeah. So you're kind of doing it at an angle, and it's trying to be like a mouse pointer, but it's just not as accurate as a mouse pointer. So it's kind of,
well, I guess everything's on quite a scrunched scale, so yeah, that doesn't help either.
Yeah. So, but aside from that, the one thing actually I thought of was, I think it was last week or the week before, we had somebody write in complaining about how the new Age of Empires game doesn't use the Wi-Fi connection.
That's right. Yes, that's sat in our very diligent emailer.
But this actually does. You can play up to three other people online.
Madness.
So
this is why we should research our questions before we answer them.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either. That's quite interesting, although I don't know whether it's something like with we had quite a backlog of questions, whether it was actually from some point when that wasn't confirmed.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but yeah, but definitely it does use the Wi-Fi connection for online play. You can do local wireless and online as well. So I'm looking forward to going through it, looking forward. Hopefully I can find somebody else out there playing online. That's often the problem when you get these DS games that have online functionality, is that you can't find anybody else that's online. So
I mean, I imagine it's even more of a problem, you know, I mean, if they go back and pick these games up like sometime after, like I have done with Advance Wars Days of Ruin, I mean, then the probability of finding players is sort of much lower than it would have been if you got it at launch. So.
Oh, but it's dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's always going to be an issue. So, like, there's one thing for sort of when you would review the game and say the likelihood of getting players, which may not be that great even then, but some months hence, it's going to be pretty bad. It's going to be even worse.
Yeah, especially with a game like this that will appeal probably mostly to, you know, people that happen to, that probably game mostly on the PC, but kind of like Age of Empires, so they decide to get it for the DS, you know, or like an older kind of crowd that, you know, I don't know. I just can't see this.
70-year-olds,
I mean,
playing it.
Well, it's like
I remember the Persian Empire. It was nothing like this.
But yeah, you know, it's not going to have the critical mass of some of the other games. Yes, me.
Oh, dear.
Exactly. I'm halfway there, buddy. Halfway there. Just give me time.
All right, Joel. So if there's nothing else, we'll go on to James.
Go ahead.
What merry gaming delights have you got?
So
for us?
I'm on my third review copy in as many weeks.
Oh yes, and they're all, the other two are on the site, right? They're done.
No, they're not. They're one's written and it was a complete fucking disaster, as John can attest.
Yes.
One is almost written but not submitted yet because I'm trying to get more online matches, and one is I'm in the process of playing. And the one I'm in the process of playing is Tomb Raider Underworld. All right, so Tomb Raider came out.
Which version is that? Wii or
Wii,
DS, James?
For the Wii.
Right.
Tomb Raider came out, what, 1996? Something like that?
Yeah, it's got to be around. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's the original.
I'm pretty sure it's 96. So, gaming has progressed a whole lot since 96, especially 3D gaming. Mm. Unless the title Tomb Raider is on the front of the game, then nothing has happened. Because this game, in every respect, is just like the game back in 96, including the crummy camera controls, where the camera will swing around and give you the oh-so-helpful angle of a blind jump with the close-up on Lara's tits. Nice. So all you see are her breasts. That's the entire frame.
Sounds good.
But I need to make this blind jump and hope to God there's something back there to catch. And there usually isn't, so you usually have to reclimb this whole stupid process over again. It's great. Let's go back to the tits, yeah. That's basically all this game has. I'm going to write the word tits in my review as many times as I can physically get it through.
Or you could be like Zach and put in boobies. B-E-W-B-I-B-E-S.
I think that comes from all the Alaskan winters.
I think so. It gets cold up there.
It just gets to his head.
You need something to keep you warm.
But, yeah. There we go, John. Very well played.
Thank you.
So what I'm going to talk about instead is the fact that there's a long history of these Tomb Raider games since the last generation of Lara having giant hands. And I think Angel of Darkness was sort of made fun of because it had she had these giant, like, masculine elephant hands.
And a huge Adam's apple as well.
Enormous mitts. Well, there's a scene in Tomb Raider Underworld where Lara grabs this magical ancient gauntlet that belonged to Thor because fuck it, who cares? And she puts it on and it, like, seals itself around her hand. So from that point on, it was the shape of her hand. Her, and in that scene, you see her enormous boat-sized hand. But 10 minutes of gameplay later, someone's knocked her out and has stolen it off her hand and says, and I quote, "Damn, it's too small for me now. It's not going to be able to open back up until we kill her." Which made me wonder, how big is that bitch's hands if Lara's giant boat oar is smaller than her hands? That's my impression of the game.
Since her boobs are so big, you would think that her hands would also be proportional, right?
Well, they are. Right. They're enormous.
It doesn't always work that way.
You could swat airplanes out of the sky with those hands.
It doesn't always work that way. Little known fact, Dante Culpepper, hands of a 4-year-old.
Huge boobs, though. Huge boobs.
Oh, yeah.
So, essentially, what it comes down to is, the game, not a lot of fun. Not a lot going on there. Oh, and there's also a game-ending bug that makes it impossible to complete the game if you are unlucky, and by unlucky, you have odds of 1 in 2.
Wow.
Have you derived that very thoughtfully?
Yeah, so essentially there's a bug in the game, and as far as I know, Eidos has yet to recall it, that for some people will just not be able to complete the game.
Well, they issued a fix to that. Do you know how it
Did
works?
They?
Yeah,
how
yeah.
How does it work?
All right, this is how it works. You go onto their website, right? You download a new save file. You put it on your SD card. You replace your save file on the Wii, and there you go. Game fixed.
That's ridiculous. That is ridiculous. And I will not give them credit for that in their review.
Hang on a minute. How does that work?
If you don't have an SD card, or if you don't have an SD card.
What about your progress in the game?
And if you can't get online, you're screwed.
Yeah, what if you found
can you download a save file that's like at certain points in the game, so it's approximately similar to where you would
when you hit the glitch, you're stuck in a room. So I mean, there's really not much you can do besides that. But in the game there's these like secret items you can collect that was totally spoiled to me thanks to their thoughtful press material they included in there, spoiling the fact there are secret items in there but not telling where the fuck they are. But if you've got them, does this save file have them? If you don't have them, does this save file have them? Are you going to get the special endings or whatever the hell you get for having them because you got the Eidos save file? It's stupid. The game needs to be recalled. It just does. When there's a high failure rate, it needs to be recalled. And short of them doing that, I'm not giving them credit for some save file voodoo. So if I encounter it, it does classify as a game-breaking bug, which means I can destroy the game's review score for it. Isn't that our criterion for like a 1 or a 2? There's a game-breaking bug in there that makes it impossible to complete the game.
Well, technically, you can complete the game 50% of the time.
50% of the time, right? But what I'm saying, if I encounter it, then can I destroy them for it? Because they deserve it for not beta testing their own goddamn game.
We'll talk, James. We'll take it offline.
Which just leads to an aside of how does shit like that get out if basically half people who play the game are encountering it?
Well, I think it's the case of when you're producing on a 1-year development cycle or whatever they're doing over there. It's probably got quite a lot to do with it.
It's got to be the most frustrating experience in the world to be the first person to discover that bug.
Yeah.
What's going on? Why won't this door open? Am I doing something wrong? What's wrong? And then like take a couple days for the strategy guides to get written. I'm doing that. What's wrong with this thing? And then a few more days for other people to start bitching about it. And you realize, oh, the game's broken. That'd be the worst feeling in the world.
So do you have any comments on functional games, James?
Well, besides that, Call of Duty World at War online, I've actually got some more matches in. You're either going to play against people who play this game way too seriously and are really good at it, and thanks to the Call of Duty engine of level progression, as you get better, you get awarded with better and better weapons and stats and things. Mm-hmm. Which seems like it completely makes the skill imbalance that much worse.
Yeah, extremitizes things.
It's like, gee, this guy's killing everybody with relative ease. Let's make it so he can have the unlimited rocket launcher. Mm-hmm. That won't end badly.
Yeah, it's like COD4. COD4 is the same way. Where
it is, yeah.
When you start off, you have the crap. You have like a pistol. And you're fighting guys with, like, a fucking AK-47 and, like, you know, an AR-15.
Well, great. The worst thing in there is, in the game, you get the flamethrower, which you can use multiple times during the course of the game. And in a single-player mission, when you get the flamethrower, you can just run around like you're Schwarzenegger in some film set from the 80s.
I've got a better example. Chuck Norris missing in action 2 uses a flamethrower.
There we go.
Well played.
And you can just basically run around and do whatever you want because nobody can kill you, because apparently if you get touched by even a tiny tip of a flamethrower's fire, you instantly die.
That's it. It's over.
But so people who are really, really good at the game now have flamethrowers in online matches.
Nice.
And it's no less lethal in the online match than it is in regular play. Except in online matches, the entire level are like these mazes, which means they can just stand there and wait for you to come around the corner and pull the trigger.
Oh,
it's nice. So ridiculous! Like, yeah. So I went and played a high ranking online match because I finally moved up enough. It was just destructive. I was annihilated by people with flamethrowers.
When you host a match, I'm assuming you can host a match yourself, right? Like, it's not just like random matchmaking.
I want to join a match, and then it's either friends. Like, I guess there's friends, but I don't have any.
Okay. Because I'm just wondering if you can set up a game that does not have that.
Maybe. But since I can't find anybody to have a friend code match with.
Yeah.
But I know if in most games, which is probably most of random matchmaking.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can do that. But there is one little flaw in their attempt to completely stifle communication in online gameplay. You can make your own name.
Yes. Always, as we know from Mario Kart Wii, this is always dangerous.
And my best one so far, guy who uses exclusively a flamethrower with the name Flamin' Balls.
Oh, wow. There you go. War is hell.
Yes.
War is hell indeed. Oh, never forget.
Yes. All right. Well, James, thanks for that. I look forward to reading the review and your experiences fighting the good fight against Flaming Balls. Again, it's on to me, and we haven't done this, actually, New Business, in quite a while. But in that time, I've been playing, as I've kind of alluded to in previous episodes, but because we haven't done it, I haven't spoken about it directly, Wario Land Shake. But a lot of that, I'm very pleased with it. And Advance Wars Days of Ruin, again, pretty pleased with that. But the big thing is that I got a Japanese Wii. Or as I'm also calling it, my not-so-virtual console. Basically because, you know, it fixes all the problems of the PAL with the virtual console thing. Most of the games that I want to play on virtual console are, you know, not like RPGs or anything, so the text isn't really an issue. And it was just far more affordable option than getting an American Wii. They're very difficult to get hold of. From outside the country. Apparently getting somewhat easy to get hold of inside the country, considering they sold 800,000 on the Thanksgiving week or whatever. That's pretty insane. I was looking at like 1.5 million for the month of November. They're weathering the economic downturn pretty well so far.
Yeah, I think I might just buy Wii number 2 just to prove I can get one. just have it sit there.
So they've gone nuclear, but yeah, I contributed to the Japanese sales for getting this, and so hit the virtual console pretty hard. I'll be all the games I missed out on. You know, I can actually go back now because so much of the PAL virtual console I just struck off that I wouldn't go with it because the eight bit stuff is horrendous, the Genesis stuff is horrendous. Yeah, you know, so it was really like TG16 and import games was pretty much all I would buy, and there was there's a lot of good ones. You know, Super Mario RPG, Gradius 2. All that sort of stuff. I mean, you know, I got plenty of use out of that, but now everything's open to me. So I've been playing primarily quite a lot of Dracula X, which is something that a lot of people want. Now, I know you're not particularly fond of this, Nick.
No.
PSP version, anyway.
Not my favorite.
But it's kind of an interesting game. It's a lot, in some ways, you could call it the real Castlevania 4, because what we call Super Castlevania 4 was in Japan just called Demon Castle Dracula. I know, it's a great name. Do you know the N64 one was called Demon Castle Dracula Apocalypse? That's great.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I want to meet the person who named that game and give them a dictionary.
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah, it's a Demon Castle Dracula Apocalypse, just like four bad words strung together.
But see, the thing is, though, if there was ever a name...
You mean like Disaster Day of Crisis?
But seriously, I mean, if there was ever a name that has hair on its chest, it's Demon Castle Dracula Apocalypse. right?
Exactly.
I mean, I like how there's not even any verbs in that name, or even any adjectives. It's just noun, 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 noun.
No, it's a quality name. I don't know what the sort of Legacy of Darkness version would have been called over there. But yeah, as for Demon Castle Dracula X Chino Rondo, or just Dracula X as it's more commonly known, I really, really enjoyed playing it. Like, it's old school Castlevania, so yeah. You know, it's a lot more. It's pretty stodgy, and stuff. But you have got a few things, like, you know, the stairs aren't quite as brutal because you can jump on and off them and jump, like, from actually just get up there by jumping.
Yeah.
So it's kind of that shortens it a lot, because the walking up and down is quite slow, so just jump all over the place. And you've also got the Maria character, who plays a lot more like the modern Castlevania characters from, like, the GBA and DS games, because she's got a double jump, she can slide, you know, stuff like that, you know, and she's quite a lot faster. So if you kind of played it and didn't really enjoy the Richter stuff, and I really think the game is primarily made for the Richter character, the classic Belmont gameplay, and hasn't got any of the multi-directional whipping of the fourth one or anything like that, which I think it was fun, and I really like that, and I wouldn't change it. But on the other hand, it did make the game easy.
Because yeah,
there's a lot of enemy placements where it's like, well, you can't hurt me, and I can just whip diagonally and kill you, and yeah. You're irrelevant.
And you can also with flying enemies too. You could kind of do this like perimeter attack where, you know, like in some of the other games, you have to sit there and meticulously avoid their pattern.
Yes.
So.
And it's much more like that with Dracula X, because you just whip in a straight line. And in fact, as well, one thing it kind of diminishes is there was a big thing with the NES Castlevania, especially, where it's rock hard unless you can get triple sub-weapons.
Yeah.
And then it's kind of like, if you could stay alive, a lot of stuff is just, you know, dust before your feet when you've got that. In this, it takes away doubles and triples. So it's kind of much more balanced and just challenging, you know, in itself, rather than just like with that. It was very much a case of getting the best weapons and then staying alive, kind of like an old school shooter, like a Gradius, you know, with your options or whatever. Mm-hmm. But this is more straight up, and I like that. And it's pretty hard with Richter. It's not like as hard as old school
definitely not.
Yeah.
But it's a decent medium, I'd say. And the one thing I think really stands very well up against Castlevania 4, having played that quite recently, is the bosses are a lot better. When I played Castlevania 4 recently, I was disappointed with the bosses haven't aged very well. I mean, some of them look cool, or they have like scaling effects or things like that, but generally their designs are just bad. Mm-hmm. They just stand there, and if you're of a mind to attack them quite quickly, they'll die. Mm. Yeah, as long as you got there with enough health. You know, yeah. They don't do very much. They don't force you to dodge. You can just pretty much brute force it without a lot of effort. Most of the bosses in Dracula X are quite a lot more interesting. They have, you know, attack patterns that change. You need to dodge them. You can't just sort of stand there and get in a race. It's, in that sense, yeah. It's quite a bit more satisfying.
You know, it's interesting because it almost reminds me of the kind of like a platforming version of a shoot 'em up. Where, you know, how a lot of, like that. You know, because the better you do throughout the entire stage, the more power-ups you have at the end, the easier it is to beat the boss, just like a shoot-em-up. Like,
yeah,
you know,
that,
like,
that was, I mean, especially the old ones, it was very much like that. Now, there's still, even though they've stripped out triples and doubles, it's still a bit like that with Dracula mm-hmm. X, because just the number of hearts.
Yep.
If you've amassed a lot of hearts and you can just, you know, throw axes at certain bosses, there are a lot, although Maria has very amusing sub-weapons. I mean, and some of them like just render the bosses kind of irrelevant. Like,
yeah, she has like doves and stuff, right? Doesn't she?
Yeah, but there's one boss that's like an undead knight that carries its head around, mm-hmm. and he's really quite difficult with Richter. But if you get there with Maria, you can just throw cats at it until he
yeah, that's right,
touch
you. Yeah, because I've played this a little bit on the PSP, because they released it with Dracula X Chronicles.
They actually have the original emulator.
Yeah, it's inside.
Yeah,
there.
Apparently the emulation's a little shaky.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's pretty normal though. Emulation can be really tricky.
Yeah, I mean, I'd certainly obviously haven't played the original to reference
it.
I would
say anything after the SNES Genesis era, emulation becomes much, much more difficult.
Mm, maybe that's some of the reason why we've seen so few N64 games.
N64 is a hard system to emulate. It's not like a Sega Saturn hard, but
Yeah.
Nothing's like Sega Saturn.
Sega Saturn.
Yeah, apparently
they said,
not.
We're going to make a system that nobody wants to make games for.
It made polygons in a different way, for God's sake.
But no one is going to be able to emulate this fucker.
Future proof.
We will create the unemulatable system. We can make it.
Well,
we have the technology.
We succeeded on that. But on
and,
that
the, and then they found out that that means nobody wants to make games for it either.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's quite sad. I mean, just to wrap up with it, I really like it. I hope I'm sure it will come as an import to Virtual Console, you know, and that's obviously a very sort of cost-effective way to play it. Even although, I mean, if you've got a PSP, I'm sure it's probably pretty good value to get the compilation UMD with Symphony of the Night on it as well.
Yeah, it's really cheap.
If you're just interested in playing this and you don't have a PSP, then I'm sure the Virtual Console release will be very welcome in the West, and it'll probably happen at some point. I don't see any reason why it wouldn't. You know, the Konami have had import TGCD games with Gradius 2, so it's probably just a matter of time. But it was nice to be able to play it now. The music's very fun, although it's very different from Castlevania 4 and Symphony of the Night. It's far more upbeat, arcadey kind of stuff, rather than the sort of more classical sort of bent that you get in those other games. And of course, because it was obviously this is, you know, compressed and emulated and stuff, but because it was on a CD originally, it loops very inelegantly because it was that Red Book audio kind of thing. So it just loops, it sort of gets the end, fades out, and then kicks back in. Yeah, so it's no more elegant than your MP3s on playing on Excite Truck or whatever. And you know how much we like to bring that up. So that's going to do. That's not the MP3. Well, I suppose it could be if you're really perverse.
You know what? I want to get the album for Excite Truck and put that as my MP3s on Excite Truck.
Have you heard that? I think there's an arranged album of Excite Truck called Excite Truck Brink of Truck. And it's sort of all acid jazz Excite Truck.
That's amazing.
You can put that on your MP3.
You know what? I should get that because I would just laugh all day at work while I'm trying to work on stuff.
Yeah, so that's actually what Monster Games have been working on for 2 years. It's not a game. Oh, no.
It's a remix of the Excite Truck soundtrack.
Yeah. So before we take a break, we're going to just do DLC Mondays. There's not a lot to see here, really.
Games that none of us have ever heard of.
Not to downsell the segment that we're about to do, but yeah, not terribly exciting. So first of all, we've got two WiiWare games. One of them is called Bruiser and Scratch. This is a puzzle game by some people that used to be in Naughty Dog. Is that right, Nick?
Yeah, the guys who did Crash Bandicoot and stuff, yep.
Yeah. Yeah, and this is 1,000 points. It's another puzzle game. It has some sort of superfluous story mode attached to it that apparently doesn't really provide enough content to merit the 1,000 point price tag when we've got stuff like Tetris Party kicking around these days.
This is a Steel Penny Games, isn't it?
Yeah.
I guess that's the name. So obviously it's just came out, so I don't think any of us have any experience with it. But conceptually, it doesn't seem all that interesting. It's a pretty crowded market right now with puzzle games on WiiWare. And the next thing is Hockey All Star Shootout. So this is a WiiWare game.
Hockey All Star Shootout.
This game sounds terrible. It just sounds terrible.
Well, John, you're Canadian. What do you think of this game?
I haven't seen it. I'm sure it's terrible. The first thing that comes to mind is I know that EA Sports just announced that they're actually they're going to make an arcade NHL title that's made by the same guys that make NHL 09, which is absolutely amazing. So I wouldn't even go anywhere near this. Even if I was still in Canada, I wouldn't even go near it.
Is this some sort of force field in Canada that just makes you do stuff?
By the way, I'm
hockey.
Watching a video of Hockey All-Star Shootout, and right up in the top corner, Canadian flags.
Of course.
But it's got your Mies in the background.
Oh, nice.
Well, oh, guys, shh, you need to hear this. Yeah, not so bad now, huh?
So they sampled the Excite Truck soundtrack and put it in the background. Awesome.
By the way, just from watching the video, the entire game is you taking shots on a goalie
who has no face.
Wow.
He has a mask, but he's clearly dead behind the eyes.
Queuing it up now.
Oh, it's Jason Voorhees. There you go.
With your Miis in the background cheering. That's about it. It's the whole game. But, nice. but Mii usage in a non-Nintendo game.
Yeah, well, that happens a fair bit. You know, like TV show king or whatever. I mean, WiiWare games have been doing that quite a lot, I think. That's 500 points if it takes your fancy. And then we've got one virtual console game this week for North America, and that is Sonic the Hedgehog 2 for the Sega Master System. Now, this isn't actually really a port of the Sonic 2 for Genesis. It's actually like its own successor to the Master System game. So it does also have Tails in it, but it's not the same game.
No.
So you're not just buying a worse version of Sonic 2 if you buy this. It's his own game really, but it's also called just Sonic 2. I guess this was the days before people liked long subtitles to differentiate.
Sonic the Hedgehog 2, the ultimate experience for your Sega Master System.
Yeah, that would have done it. But, you know, these days, so Sega's marketing guys could have cooked that up back then beyond their capabilities.
But you know what? The Master System, their marketing team was clearly borderline retard just from looking at the box art they used to put out.
Yeah.
What is up with that? It looks like graph paper.
It is graph paper.
Why would you want to associate? Oh, look, video games are fun. You know, why would you want to associate with graph paper?
I guess you're unaware of it. The was it Kung Fu for the Master System? You need to go look at what the box art for that was.
Terrible. I can tell you that right now.
It just seems like it. Look, you know what it says to me, other than you know math classes, is just budget. It looks like because they all had these graph paper boxes. You know, every Master System game looked like that to some extent, and it just looks very like this is the sort of the cheapy range, like the sort of supermarket's own brand of cola rather than Coca-Cola.
That's what it does too. Yeah,
it really does. It's very sort of. Especially in America, they were kind of an inferior. They were an inferior good. They were in a bad way.
The
alternative to the Nintendo, and presumably did compete at a lower price, and maybe that's it. But it was actually disturbingly popular in Europe.
Now, you listeners can't see what I just linked the rest of the chat to, but it is the box art for Pro Wrestling, the Mega Cartridge.
Oh yeah, I've seen
Mega
that.
There is so much wrong
with this cartridge cover that it's. Blows the mind, because clearly it did, because the guy wrestling has actually taken his head off his shoulders and has himself in a chokehold.
I mean, what does that say about the game? Nothing.
It says there's wrestling in it, and that it is a mega cartridge.
Oh, the mega cartridge, and of course that which sort of precedes the Mega Drive, although of course it wasn't known as that. In America, it was just the Genesis, but it was really the Mega Drive. Well, I guess the only thing to say is that apparently, you know, given the restrictions that it is an 8-bit game and everything, you know, so it's not necessarily going to be everything that you expect from Sonic if you've just played the Genesis ones. It's not bad. It's actually a pretty good game.
And it's the actually the Game Gear version as well. It's the same game.
Oh, yeah, they were sort of interchangeable at that point.
Oh my god. I just learned something even better. Transbot, the Sega cartridge. And I'll put this in the AAC feed.
So at what point do you think they went from the Sega cartridge to the...
Actually, I had that game. I had Transbot.
What was it, John?
Was it good?
I can't remember for the life of me.
I love the Sega cartridge.
Yes! That's
so matter of fact.
The Sega cartridge.
Yeah, this was it. At this point, this was the only game that was available for me.
I think the guy on the cover is actually trying to fly off the box because he's so lonely.
Yeah, well, he's so in the corner. Like, most of that is unadorned graphics.
Yeah.
Well, that's gonna do it for DLC Mondays. Remember, with Master System games, when you download them, as few of them as there are, box art not included.
Damn it!
And with that, we're going to take a break, and we're going to be back with some listener mail and a little feature about Japanese games that we didn't get this year. And we're back, and we're going to start with a brief listener mail section. This is a follow-up to our Ocarina episode. Now, of course, people that listen to the episode will know that John was on the show, but not on the show.
Yep.
So it'd be nice, hopefully, I don't want to jinx it, that people actually hear some thoughts that he has on Ocarina, responding to some of these questions. Of course, James was unable to make it that night, so it'd be good to get his perspective. And Nick, I'm sure it was an important game in your gaming life or whatever.
Without question.
Yep, so we'll get right into it. And James, you have the first letter.
All right, so Ryan writes, "Love the Ocarina podcast, guys. OT is easily my favorite game of all time, but there's one element I feel wasn't done quite right, the time travel. Aside from the well in Kakyra Village and it as a temple, there was very little reason to go back to Young Link. I kind of hope that someday, perhaps a side project between the major Zelda games, Nintendo remakes Ocarina a la Zero Mission and revisits some of those concepts that weren't fully realized. Does that idea appeal to you guys, or will Nintendo's efforts be better directed towards more original projects?"
Well, this wasn't the only letter we got about people sort of asking whether they think remaking Ocarina would be a good idea. Some cynical souls would say they already did that with Twilight Princess.
I was going to say that because I'm a cynical soul, but you said it before I could.
Yes, indeed I did. So, yeah, I mean, I guess you'd always prefer them to do something original.
They never do. What?
Well, they're not Square Enix. Let's get this. Let's get this
John,
right. They're not.
John.
They're second in line. Sorry. Just derailed it. Sorry.
I will say, though, to counter John's point, a certain DS game seems pretty original by comparison.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, they've done stuff, you know. I mean, Wind Waker was different in some ways, not in others.
A certain shooting game that was originally going to have Terminator-style aliens from the future come down. And...
well, that would have been it. I got originality coming out of the wazoo.
That would have blown my mind. If that had been the actual story, I would now own a copy of Link's Crossbow Training.
Yeah, I don't know. I would own it if it was just cheap because it didn't come with the bloody Zapper that I'm not interested in. Because I do still kind of like the idea of just a high school game for really cheap. But yeah, never mind. No, as far as this, so I mean, in terms of remake, I don't really see that. You know, it's a big. I mean, maybe like someone else who emailed had sort of said about whether it would be nice to have it on a handheld.
Yeah.
Sort of like Super Mario 64 and stuff like that. I mean, I don't know. All it would be is for the portability, I guess. In that case, I mean, in this particular case, when you talk about Zero Mission, it's more of like like the Castlevania 4 example, where it's a remake in terms of the story, but it's really like a new game to quite a large extent. Because Zero Mission certainly was. I mean, it was more like Super Metroid than it was like the original Metroid.
Mm-hmm.
In general.
And it needed to, because the original Metroid was comparatively very primitive.
Yes, exactly. And the speed of the gameplay and the complexity of the gameplay and so forth. So I guess, regardless of remaking, his point about time travel, I mean, I kind of agree. I mean, I kind of had some unfounded, lofty expectations, like based off what happened in Link to the Past with the Dark World, Light World thing. That, you know, because there were some puzzles involving switching between the two that, you know, you could find portals to enter the Dark World, but you could re-enter the Light World at any time using the mirror.
Right.
So that kind of asymmetric adjustment meant you could have some intricate little puzzles for traversing between the two. Never really had that applied with the time travel thing. You could only travel through time at one location, which was the Temple of Time.
Mm-hmm.
It really wasn't very integral. I mean, it's more of a narrative thing than it was actually a gameplay thing, unlike Link to the Past.
And
so
it does feel like
in that sense,
I was going to say, it does feel like they shoehorned in that the Desert Colossus just for the sake of...
Yeah, I mean, the thing about that, it was very much just... But even then, it was pretty sort of partitioned, really.
Right,
you do the one half with Little Link, and you do the other half with Adult Link, and, you know, never the twain shall meet, really. It didn't mesh or, like, have any really complicated sort of gameplay applications like you could have had, possibly. I mean, I guess at the time, I was really pumped. I was thinking, like, it's going to be, like, Link to the Past, but it's going to be even more complicated. It's going to time travel. It's going to bend your brain. It's like, it did none of that, obviously.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Whether they would explore that in a future game, and I guess they kind of do with Majora's Mask somewhat, like it was a sort of different take on it.
Yeah, Majora's Mask might actually bend your brain, to quote Greg.
I agree with that, yeah.
Well, they had some clever things in Majora's Mask, like obviously you lost all your money, but you had a little stamp on your hand, which meant that you didn't lose it, because even though you haven't paid that money into the bank, you've got the stamp to prove that you did. So that means that he still thinks you've put like thousands of rupees in.
That's right. You're actually robbing from the bank.
Yeah, you're robbing from him, but you know it's only because of some sort of temporal inconvenience. You know,
because they don't have complex banking computers, so they have stamps on your hand. So don't wash your hand because your fortune's gone. But
to some extent,
you
just
think
maybe with Majora's Mask they were kind of done with time travel.
Right, they kind of did it kind of weird though, and there's a lot of references to time in subplots of Majora's Mask too. I mean,
and of course, with Oracle of Ages, you basically had a light world, dark world thing where it was one was set in the past and one wasn't. I mean, but it didn't really. There wasn't a whole lot that really kind of distinguished it from the dark world, light world thing.
Well, there's. You could say the same thing about seasons, where you had the different seasons. Yeah. Even the Minish Cap, where you had little Big Link.
Yeah, the miniature. At least with that, there was sort of more of a sort of visual. Everything looked quite different and everything. But, yeah, I mean, it's something they've done a lot, really. So you could argue in terms of just that duality thing. So it's like, why would they do it again? So yeah, I mean, I agree that it didn't feel quite right that it was done right. So much it was kind of done fairly underwhelmingly. It wasn't anything particularly important. It was more of a narrative thing, and I'd just like to see them concentrate on original stuff, as original as they can be.
Yeah,
that would be nice. All right, John, I think you've got the next one.
All right, the next one. Brandon writes, I'm glad for Nintendo, my daughter, and all the little girls and boys on this planet that the female characters were such a strong part of Ocarina of Time. Who knew when we saw the intro of A Link to the Past back in 1991 that five of the seven wise men that sealed Ganondorf away were actually female? While Link is certainly the star of the show, the females in Ocarina of Time are intelligent and strong characters with great responsibilities and tremendous power. And that's it. More of a statement than...
I would like to point out though that Navi might actually completely undermine this entire thing by being the annoying nagging female stereotype.
Interesting. Who is always there over your shoulder?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, John. She was always there looking over your shoulder, and she just wouldn't shut up.
Yep, backseat driver.
Until you told her, "Get the fuck out of my life, Navi," and she flew away through a window.
Yeah, I didn't really think of Navi as being particularly female. It was like in
hey,
George Mass,
listen.
You've got
that was awesome.
That's just because she's small, rather than just being feminine. Because like in the next one, you had the brother and sister fairies. It was very obvious,
right? But in that case, the brother fairy was sort of not around you very much.
No, because he was with Skull Kid.
Yeah, toddling, yeah,
hanging out with the boys. Who were kidding?
Yeah, I mean, but it's a fair point. There's a lot of important non-player sort of characters that are female. Obviously, you've got like Saria, Impa, and then you've got
Impa's not really female.
Impa's somewhere on the line there.
Yeah, you got Tingle. You know, I mean.
He doesn't show up till Majora's Mask.
By the way, do we know the gender of the owl? Because he constantly made you repeat everything he said. Because do you need to hear this again? Yes? No? And that's like my relationships.
Okay. Thanks for that. I guess at the time, maybe, I don't know, how many sort of like credible non-player character females were there in Nintendo games? Probably not that many. I mean, most of them needed rescuing.
Yes.
And of course, like Zelda was like a more active participant in the story than in previous games, because you kind of had the whole sort of conferring with her as a child, and then of course she was running around as Sheik later on.
Yep.
So it was only right at the end that she got captured and needed to be rescued.
Well, we have, she is the reverse Birdo in that game.
Oh, Birdo. I still never get over how that got in there. How does that come to pass? I guess just like bored 8-bit developers, they're just like, why can't this be more interesting? let's make it more interesting.
What kind of subtext can I put in here?
It was like in Japan, Nintendo said, you know, NOA is kind of a stick in the mud. What happens if we do this?
I've got the last one. This is from Tom in Canberra, Australia. He writes, that Ocarina of Time anniversary discussion was one of the most satisfactory lookbacks of a game in podcast history. You guys covered it all. Personal influences, design greatness, his ongoing relevance, still current emotional impact. And the Zelda music interludes were just the multiple orgasms after you thought you were spent. Do a Metroid Prime one as soon as possible. Screw waiting for the 10th anniversary. The music in that game, oops. So I assume he has a disparaging word to say about the Metroid Prime music. I thought it was alright. I mean, I kind of preferred the Super Metroid soundtrack, but that's not to say I dislike the Metroid Prime one, that's for sure. But you may be wondering why I included that letter other than to be self-congratulatory. But in fact, it was because we did get quite a lot of feedback in the talk
thread
and stuff like that about people saying that they wanted us to do another retrospective episode. And obviously stuff like Metroid Prime and Super Metroid is pretty obvious. Very excellent, sort of well-loved games and stuff. I was wondering if any of you guys have any if you had suggestions, like, that you personally, sort of a game that's very important to you that you would like to do in the future, maybe.
Well, the one thing about Metroid Prime is that I don't think it had as much of an impact as Ocarina of Time did.
No.
I mean, I think it was, it was a critical hit, and a lot of people love it, but...
And
you know.
Relatively, for the generation, I can't think of a game that was more impactful.
Yeah.
Like, around, you know, sort of in that time, the early part of this decade. But yeah, I mean, compared to Ocarina of Time, or say for instance, Super Mario 64, you can't quite manage it. So, that's some of the reason why we jumped all over Ocarina of Time. I mean, 10th anniversary is a round number, but I mean, that game is just perfect for it. But there's plenty of other good ones we could do. James, any ideas?
I'm trying to think of what a good one would be. I mean, we could do Star Fox, but they completely butchered that franchise.
Yeah, but that's the point. We could pretend that they didn't.
They did. We could
pretend
like
they stopped.
We don't
have to talk about
Fox
anything
64.
That happened after 97.
We could maybe do something like F-Zero, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, F-Zero, I mean...
Kind of a dark horse.
Which F-Zero would you like to focus on? This is an interesting question. What is your favorite, John?
I don't know. It's... I don't know. Which one do you think had the most influence? I mean, do you think it was influential?
Well, I guess the thing is, look, I mean, the original F-Zero, as early as it was on the Super Famicom with the Mode 7 stuff, that was quite a big deal at the time in terms of, you know, in terms of what... home consoles could give you something that kind of impressive, you know, something that was you'd more associate with what the arcades could do at the time. So I guess in if you want to talk about impact, that's probably the way to go, the first one. But after that, I don't know, F-Zero X is a lot of fun. It's just like, I mean, that's the only F-Zero I've ever like got multiplayer on, really, because obviously the first one didn't have it. And then, like, GX just didn't happen. And I think GX is just maybe a little too overwhelming. You know, with F-Zero X, it was able to just, you know, people hadn't really played it, just have fun with them. I don't know, it was something about it that was maybe a little more accessible. And we used to just screw around and just not race properly at all, just trying to hit each other off the track. Yeah. It was so much fun. It was very fun.
I think we're getting close to the 10th anniversary of Donkey Kong 64, and I think that deserves a retrospective.
that's world-shattering.
How many times have I bagged that game on this show? I mean, just how many times? Have we gotten to the double digits yet? We have to be.
Find more bananas. Just find more.
I feel like I wish they'd bring it out on the virtual console. Just
why?
So
you could spend thousands of hours looking
for
goddamn bananas?
I've never played it. I just want to say, yeah, but that's the thing. See, unlike when I was importing games at the time, I wouldn't have to blow £80 on it to play it. And therefore, I could just say, I've had enough of this game now, I will cease playing it. Rather than, no, you paid for this, you better enjoy it.
I remember getting to the end thinking, this ending had better be awesome. And then, phase one, you're fighting in some fucker's shoe.
Okay.
You're shooting weapons at King K. Rool's toes inside his boot.
Well, isn't it? I guess we should have expected that James' suggestion would be a retrospective where you get to whine about something.
Yes. 2 hours on Adean Chronicles.
No, you've already practically done that.
By the way, 2 hours on Adean Chronicles would be longer than they spent developing the game.
Now, that makes me think of, speaking of that game, I remember at one point, I think James changed my icon in the forums to one of the characters from Adean Chronicles. And I think actually...
This is the kind of work that we are missing now, that we don't have a community manager.
Exactly. I'm assuming that James also changed my subtitle to Mr. Hardcore Gamer.
I did.
Yeah. you're a dick.
I thought he was being ironic. Oh, that's been shattered now. It's just James being vindictive.
I was like the second worst community manager we've ever had out of two.
Well, Nick, I guess Banjo, you like that a lot.
Yeah, I don't know if it's really earth-shattering or something worth looking back on.
It doesn't have to be earth-shattering, to be fair. Ocarina of Time was, but you can have
I would say the one other pick I would have would be GoldenEye.
GoldenEye's good.
And again, you want to talk, it's not Ocarina of Time or Super Mario 64, but impactful it was, and no doubt about that. Mm-hmm.
What about Mario Party?
Fuck you.
No. I said it as a joke, but there's some seriousness there.
If I had played a Mario Party game before 2004, maybe I could have done.
But no, think about it. Think about what that did for the whole party game franchise.
Genre. Ripped holes in my palms. That's what it did.
Yeah, it was a health and safety landmark.
I know. How about this? We do a retrospective. It could be 20 retrospective. On the Mystery Dungeon series.
Yes. I like the way you think.
minute 7 through minute 13. Fuck!
we can compare every single review we've ever had on the site and how they're all exactly the same.
That's quite sad. Well, with that, I guess we'll just say if anybody else wants to email us with suggestions for games that they'd like us to look back at, something that was very important to them, we'd appreciate that, and it'll be sort of normal service resumed for listener mail next time, I guess. So your usual question, comments, and suggestions and whatnot can go to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. Now we're going to move on to a feature that I'm calling 2008 The Lost Levels, and kind of as it implies from the fate of the Super Mario Bros. 2 that was released in Japan and not released in North America until it was on Super Mario All-Stars. These are games that came out in Japan almost exclusively at the end of this year that haven't come out in North America yet, and some of them may never come out in North America, quite obviously. But, it's kind of an interesting appendix to what we were talking about in the Review of the Year show, that we were talking about the fact that the second half of this year was pretty sparse, wasn't it? There wasn't a whole lot coming out. Obviously, you know, some of the games that, you know, the Nintendo's big two for the holiday period, Wii Music and Animal Crossing, didn't inspire a lot of enthusiasm from a lot of people. And even the third party stuff that started off really strong with Okami, Boom Blocks, Pro Evo Soccer, Bully, No More Heroes, there was a lot of stuff in the first half. In the second half, you had The Blob, which I liked, and I know Nick liked it a lot.
Oh, yeah.
But not that much aside, really. And some of the reason you might argue is that, obviously, Nintendo has always got a Japan-centric view of these things.
Yeah.
And there was a lot more stuff coming out in Japan. So maybe that's some of the reason why they were kind of mysteriously apathetic.
Well, I think they're also more worried about the market in Japan.
I think they seem like, and as we kind of touched on with sales data quite earlier, quite rightly, seem to think that the American market will take care of itself just fine.
Yeah, pretty much.
So these are some of the games. We're gonna start off with the DS pretty quick, because there wasn't quite so much stuff that's notable. And of course, the DS is region free, so if there's anything that you're particularly desperate to look at, there's always the import option in that regard. But the first one, I think the most important on this list of just a few first-party games, because Nintendo didn't do a whole lot in the second half with regard to DS either. It was pretty much like Kirby and the Cooking Guide, and that was about it, right?
Yeah, basically.
So the first one is Daigatsu Brandbros DX, which is a sequel to the first Brandbros game that came out quite early on in the DS's life, I think. Mm-hmm. And by all accounts, this is a really, really good, fully featured music game for DS by Nintendo.
So not Wii Music.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. A lot of people say it does a lot of the things that Wii Music would like to do and does them extremely well on handheld. For instance, it has a song creator feature. So if you know how to sort of read and write music, you can write a song and then it will be playable in the game, just as any of the other songs in the game are playable. That part of it's quite impressive. You've got the ability to download songs through Nintendo Wi-Fi connection with this one.
Again, not Wii Music.
Yeah, not music. It's got thousands of songs.
So again,
apparently.
Not Wii Music.
Yeah, thousands of songs. Now, there is more like Wii Music. There's a lot of public domain stuff, and of course, being as it is Japanese, there's a lot of J-pop and all that kind of stuff.
So not Wii Music.
Yankee Doodle Dandy? I mean, that's what it really needs to put it over the
probably
top.
Probably the Yankee. If there's thousands of songs and there's a lot of public domain stuff in there, Yankee Doodle Dandy's probably in there somewhere, even if it's the Japanese version. So, yeah, I mean, the thing is, this seems like a really, really impressive game. Yeah. You've got so many different aspects. There's even like a karaoke aspect to it.
So again,
not Wii Music.
This is seriously fully featured. I've seen import reviews of this and the original, both very positive. But
so again,
never.
Everybody with me now?
They're totally different. Oh, totally different
Wii
games.
Music.
Exactly. What's good? What's bad? There you go.
We've already established the difference. This is not Wii Music, yes. This is, but the thing is, so it the one thing that has never been talked about, that it's the predecessor would be coming to North America or anywhere else, neither is this one. And I guess the main reason must be just that constructing a huge song list like that, you know, without J-pop, maybe, you know, they're just not willing to pay the licensing to get like a really impressive library together.
In this case, like Wii Music.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that is one of the constraints. I mean, otherwise, I mean, you know, with the success, the sort of burgeoning success of music games.
Well,
even on the
I don't
portable,
know. Didn't Wii Music kind of meet with soft sales?
Yeah, Wii Music did, but I'm saying in general. I mean, look, Guitar Hero on DS is selling very well, and that's like more expensive and everything. And I mean,
that's just hand cramps the game. I'm sorry.
be that as it may,
I am a former concert violist, and my hands didn't hurt that bad after like 2 hour concerts.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't. Is there any other reason why you think this isn't getting localized? Just licensing, really? Because it seems
agree,
like it'd be perfectly marketable.
I think a lack of Nintendo's interest in doing it.
No, Iwata actually commented directly about the game, saying that they want to bring it here. It'd just be a matter of licensing. That's
it's logistical, really, mainly. Yeah.
Well,
so,
I still think it comes down to a lack of interest in doing it, because if they wanted to
Look, I mean, I guess the point being, maybe you could say, well, if they were really interested in doing it, then they'd be more prepared to tackle the logistical challenge.
Sure. Yeah.
So they're just, maybe they're not interested enough. But it's not, you know, there are hurdles.
It's not total disinterest, but it's not like supreme interest either.
Right. Well,
I guess not.
I think you might see something maybe with the release of the DSi over here.
Yeah, I think that might be true.
Because if it is such a big feature in that game, then it would make sense to have it, you know, to have a device out there that can actually take advantage of it.
It would be, yeah, I mean, it would be quite interesting to see, you know, how they market the DSi in the West in terms of, like, you know, are they going to sort of have a bunch of flagship downloadable games to launch it as the sort of, as the reason why you want to buy it, or maybe, you know, some sort of retail games to come with it. As we said, maybe at some point they will kind of clear enough of these sort of problems to actually make something out of it. And it would be really nice if they did, because it's quite ambitious for a handheld game.
Yeah.
It doesn't
not
skimp on
Wii
anything.
Music.
Yeah, and with that, we're moving on. The next one that's kind of related is Rhythm Tengoku Gold. So this is the sequel to the original Rhythm Tengoku, which came out in GBA on JBA back in 2006, which was Japan only.
It's
the rhythm game.
It's WarioWare with music, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it isn't quite, because the games are not a short, are they?
No, they're not. Well, some of them are, but by and large, no.
So
they're not.
So it's got the same kind of quirkiness and sort of.
Well, it's
charm
the same team. I mean.
Yeah, it's the same guys, and there's a lot of that imprint there, but it is a little different, and it's all rhythm-based, and I'm personally a big fan of
Me
the original.
Me too, it's a great game.
Yeah, I played through that to absolute death. But we are getting this one.
Yes, we are.
There's Rhythm Heaven for the DS. It'll be coming out sometime in the first half of next year. We don't really know when yet. But I think we're looking forward to that. I mean, that's going to be great. I mean, this was a huge deal for Nintendo in Japan during the second half of this year, because it sold extremely well.
It blew the doors off.
Yeah, absolutely dominant. You know, still charting in the top 10 or 20, even now, you know, several months after it released. And I just hope that the delay is going to mean that they're going to market it properly to the West, and then it can be a comparable success.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Because I've actually got to one of the perks of having a Japanese Wii is the Everybody's Nintendo channel from Japan. So I did downloaded the DS demo of this and Banbros and gave them a little try. Now, obviously with Banbros, it's kind of difficult to scratch the surface of that in a little demo. It was pretty simple. But with Rhythm Tengoku, you get a pretty good idea of how well the stylus interface works, and it looks like it's going to work just fine. So that, I think...
Beautiful.
Now, do you guys think this is going to be a Touch Generations game, or do you think they'll just release it?
It's a little quirky for Touch Generations.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I don't know. I mean, they actually did. I mean, it's interesting to bring that up because they did market EBA as Touch Generations. Touch Generations.
Well, that was added to Touch Generations after the fact, though, wasn't it?
I don't know. The copy I bought from North America had the Touch Generations insignia on it. I didn't buy it like at launch.
Because I'm looking at my copy right now off the shelf, and I don't see it on there.
No, yeah, I think you're right. I think that was.
It was added after the Touch Generations kind of sputtered. Like, we need to add more games to this thing.
Well, it's a very, maybe Rhythm Tengoku's kind of more legitimate in that regard.
But, I would say it's probably less legitimate. It's even weirder.
It's weirder, but I think it's less hardcore gamey than EBA.
Yeah.
You know,
to put that perspective, EBA is a fucking weird game.
It's a little bit weird. Of course, like, I mean, EBA obviously is a good example of kind of what maybe, you know, they could do. Like, obviously, Owendan never quite came here, but, you know, it did as EBA, you know.
Right.
You can't just directly port it. It's more of a sort of complicated localization. In the case of Band Brothers, that's kind of what you're looking at, except, like, to an even greater extent. Whereas with Rhythm Tengoku, I mean, that's not the case. You know, it's pretty simple. It's going to be bizarre, but, you know,
there's
that's
actually
kind of the point.
Been Owendan 2 since then, hasn't there?
Yeah, I have it.
That came out in 2007. Yeah,
I thought it kind of suffered in the sales.
Yeah, we've never gotten an EBA 2, obviously. So
right.
I'm not sure we will, unfortunately. But yeah, that's an. But, I mean, so we're getting that, but it's another one. It's another really sort of big. In every sense, it's critically acclaimed. It's a huge seller, and you know, it was missing from the second half of this year. But I guess it'll just make 2009 all sweeter. The next one's Fire Emblem Shadow Dragon. Again, this is coming out sometime in the first half of next year.
This was just a translation timing issue. It just wasn't ready.
Yeah, although it's out in Europe now. It came out in December the 5th. So for some reason, we get it first. Very odd. I don't know why.
Well, that's
obviously
kind of
translation
a recent
done.
Trend, and I find it disturbing.
Yeah, but I assume it's going to be based on the fact that translation's obviously done. I assume that, you know,
yeah, it's
very
coming.
Well,
well
be,
we know
it could be an announcement of a release date very shortly.
Yeah, it's just Fire Emblem for the NES, the original Fire Emblem.
But yeah, so and it's been, yeah, so this is a sort of, you know, a remake.
Right.
And it's a bit of a Zero Mission-y kind of remake. Because
I wouldn't
adding,
go that far, though.
Apparently, they are adding some of the more advanced kind of battle elements that were in later Fire Emblems
right.
to... Well, the NES sort of template.
Yeah, because, so. I mean, I played the NES game, and it's pretty stripped down by comparison.
Yeah, so I think they couldn't get away with literally remaking.
Oh, they
it.
Could,
I mean,
but the question is...
Well, they could. Well, they clearly prefer to sort of add a little extra, but it may be not too complicated, perhaps, because they want to welcome more players into the series or whatever. It was on GBA, they did come to the West, but perhaps they think with the DS audience so they can get
right.
a few more people. There's a little extra content on the story side, and like I said, there's these more advanced battle mechanics, but yeah, it's Fire Emblem, you know. The things I've heard from Europe and Japan and stuff are good, but you should probably know by now whether you want to get this or not. But that's another notable release that didn't come out in Western markets except for Europe, just bizarrely.
You know, they might have thought that maybe that type of game would kind of be lost this Christmas because of, like, Chrono Trigger
and
all those
kind of
games
right.
coming out.
Yeah, I think that's probably the main reason it's kind of scheduling. Like, and also, people seem to... There seems to be more willingness to release something in December here, mm-hmm. whereas, like, it's kind of like anything after Thanksgiving is, like...
Yeah,
kind of
because
dead.
it needs to get that Black Friday. That's really it. It needs to be in the stores on Black Friday.
And then, of course, they just want to put a reasonable amount of distance, so it'll be soon enough, and I'm sure it'll be pretty good. All right, we're going to get onto the meat of it now with the Wii. The first one, pretty high-profile stuff, Fatal Frame 4. In case you don't know by now, this is a sequel to Tecmo's survival horror series.
Fatal Frame 3?
It was developed by Grasshopper.
Those crazy sons of bitches responsible for Killer7.
Yeah, and that was a sort of cooperation that was sponsored and participated in by Nintendo themselves in Japan. So right. They've published this game in Japan.
Yes.
Back in July. We still really haven't heard anything concrete about it coming out here. So,
well, we did hear something concrete in that Nintendo didn't even mention it during E3.
Yeah, well, Nintendo didn't mention it in E3, and they've pretty much point blank refused to mention it when prompted.
Yes.
By questioning ever since. But I think there was something recently. XSEED said that they know that it's coming from someone,
but not from them. Next year. Right.
Not from them, but they wouldn't say whether it was from Nintendo or not, but somebody's bringing it sometime next year. I guess, obviously, there's quite a lot of anticipation surrounding this because it's a mature title. It's
right.
Not that many of high profile on Wii.
Yeah, and it
looks good from the early shots and things. Are you guys pretty, are you disappointed that we didn't get this already?
I'm kind of confused. I'm not so much disappointed as I am just... What the hell, Nintendo?
Yeah, exactly. Why?
Well, I guess the biggest reason for that being that it seemed like there was such a gap for this, the kind of mature, skewed Nintendo title to sort of nestle, sort of somewhat in obscurity next to the more high-profile mainstream ones like Animal Crossing, and yet they didn't.
Yeah.
It's a little odd. That's something in Japan, they kind of had that base covered.
And, the funny thing is, when E3 rolled around and it wasn't there, I remember we were all really surprised it wasn't there, but the assumption was, why aren't you talking about this? It's coming out any month now. And then we realized it wasn't coming out any month now, and that's why I didn't talk about
it. Yeah, that's a good point. Because, they're quite perfectly capable of staying silent on something and right before it comes out.
But in this case, that wasn't the case.
It doesn't seem... Yeah, it may be, but it'll be next year when they break their silence on it. There has been, apparently, according to the official Nintendo magazine in the UK, Nintendo is going to publish it in Europe supposedly around February. So... Again, I guess with stuff that's happened with Shadow Dragon, it's feasible that could still be considerably before it would come out in North America.
Right.
But hopefully it means that it's actually going to be pretty similar time as well, if indeed that information's accurate. Because, there have been negative things about the control set that, a lot of people were excited about Fatal Frame on Wii because they thought it was this great fit because it would use the pointer controls.
It doesn't.
And then it doesn't. It's kind of more like gesture-based.
Unforgivable. It really is.
It's counterintuitive.
It's like, wow, we have this control scheme seemingly uniquely designed for this game. Fuck it.
If I recall correctly, the Wii remote gestures controlled the flashlight, I think, which is really peripheral. I mean, if it still has the same controls as the older games, it should be fine, but... That's going to be hard to tell. I have no idea.
It does seem kind of like a waste, though.
Yeah, it's definitely a waste. It doesn't make any sense.
I know the IGN guys were very sour on it. I don't know whether there's any capacity for them to have changed it in the
end. I doubt it.
It doesn't seem particularly likely to me. All right, the next game is another first-party game. Captain Rainbow.
let's make the case against Captain Rainbow coming out anywhere besides
Japan. Why is this not going to come out? It's not going to come out because...
It's fucking weird.
Because it sold 3,000 copies in Japan.
Yeah,
that's
it's
why.
It's exceedingly weird. It has a bunch of obscure Nintendo characters.
Like Birdo. There's Birdo again.
Well, the Birdo's the most famous one, though. Because there's a lot more that are completely obscure.
Yeah.
And they have bizarre requests and sometimes sort of vaguely sexual in their nature. And stuff. Like, there's one where a guy loses his mind so much when he sees attractive women that he has nosebleeds, and it's up to Captain Rainbow to put a stop to this.
Yes.
I mean, it's just... weird, and yes, it sold terribly. It had a worse opening in Japan than Disaster Day of Crisis, the only first-party title to do so.
Yeah. That's amazing.
So, yeah, it sold poorly, and...
Now, why should it come? Just because it's so weird?
Because Choaniki is lonely, that's why.
Well, I guess the biggest argument you can make in its favor is just that it's by Skip.
Right.
Yeah.
Who's and the guys behind Chibi Robo and some of the Bit Generation games and things. And, you know, they've got a pretty good pedigree. And, you know, this is kind of them making a game they wanted to make for whatever reason. So
right.
You kind of know that it comes from a sort of genuine artistic place. So you kind of think it would be fun. But
right.
And it's probably quite amusing, I guess. Yeah. But the problem is it would take a very attentive localization to sort of get that particular quirky charm across, and you're given the sales in Japan as well, and then you would think they could actually be relatively even worse in Western markets.
Oh,
right, and
here.
With the cost of localization.
Yeah, it just does. It seems totally out of bounds. But you know, this was another, and I think it got decent reviews in Japan. So this was another game that the Japanese had in the second half that we didn't. That, you know, was probably pretty good. But I mean, they may as well not have had it apparently because they didn't buy it.
Right.
So, yeah, it's a shame. But I guess we just have to look forward to what Skip are doing next. Really.
Yeah.
I just don't see any chance for that whatsoever.
Well, this is the second Skip game in a row that we've sort of lost, because it was Giftopia.
Yeah, Giftopia.
Giftopia.
Yeah.
I think there's references to that game in
yeah, you know, there is.
Yeah, there are.
In Captain Rainbow, yeah. So that's the level of kind of minutiae and obscurity that you're dealing with here.
Giftopia.
Yeah, I don't see them getting into that. All right, the next one, appropriately enough, is
Disaster Day of Crisis.
All right, so we've talked about this quite a lot. It needs no further
introduction. Yeah, okay, so, Greg, you've played it.
I've played
why
it,
why is
yeah,
it not coming to North America, even though it came to Europe?
Well, it's more about... I guess the first thing to say about that is just that Reggie doesn't sound very warm towards it.
No.
He has sort of
no,
he made some comments that suggest he doesn't think it's particularly sort of worthy of a full price tag. He's made comments that the voice work is just too poor to really carry the game. So, you know, if when you've got the president of the Nintendo in that region speaking kind of ill of the game, that doesn't augur well. And the second part of that is, other than his sort of assessments of the game, he did say he would monitor how it sold in Europe, and it sold terribly.
It's like he knew that was coming. It's like, yes.
Yeah, oh, he did, yeah. I mean, he did. Oh, yeah, we'll monitor. Oh, we're not being unreasonable. We'll monitor it. They knew what was going to happen.
Yeah, they saw this one coming a mile away.
And let me tell you what happened. I mean, basically, I was looking at the UK charts. Obviously, UK is like not the entirety of Europe, obviously, but it's fairly indicative of the game market. And what happened was that in the week that the disaster came out,
what else came out?
and the week after, right? It didn't chart in the top 50 for Wii games.
And by the way,
UK, not all formats.
If I remember correctly, UK is actually somewhat less casual market than Europe too, isn't it?
The UK is much closer to the US.
The UK market, the Europe market is major fucking casual games.
Yeah, it's the continent. On the continent, it's more towards the casual side than we.
So if it didn't chart in the top 50 in the UK, one person in France bought this game, and he's an American expat.
Seriously, it was somebody that like came in drunk from a pub.
No. The guy who bought it in France is an American expat who is a member of the Foreign Legion, who sees himself in Ray.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's it. That's what it is. That's all it is. I need to make the case for this game. So
take it away.
If you all can bear with me, I need to rescue that girl. Holy shit! What's that? It's a goddamn tornado! Alright, tornado. I'm not scared of you. Got my friend, my gun here. I'm gonna fuck you up. Yeah, take that. Yeah. Eat steel. Force of nature. I've got one bullet left, and it's got your name on it, Tornado. That did the trick. Yeah, I'm the only force of nature here. Now I gotta go save that girl. What was that? A bear! Goddamn bears. I'm out of bullets. This isn't good. I'm out of bullets. I don't need damn bullets. Bear! Mine. Shit! Whoa. He blew up. He's a terrorist. That bear was a terrorist! He has the girl! He's a bearerist. There'll be more bearists. Not ready for him. I'm gonna save that girl now. Goddamn sexy. And you see, that's why we need this game.
Genius.
Yep, there it is. See, that's the thing. See, James stepping up to the plate, he's actually addressed Reggie's concerns, relocalized it with better voice.
The amazing thing and is, that took me all of 20 very inspired minutes to produce.
Well, what impressed me the most is the fact that you have Kenny G doing the soundtrack there. Oh no, those horns really put it over the top for me.
I like the bear high. That sounded like Chewbacca. That was excellent.
I think I've pretty much disproven all of you, and this game needs to come to the U.S. now. Like, yeah, they could just air that as the commercial. That could be the fucking commercial. I would let them have
They had commercials over here. I don't want to say they did a great job of marketing it, but they did a job.
Was it actually worse than what I just played?
You see, that's the thing. I really think they would have been better off playing up to its somewhat silliness.
They pitched it serious?
Yeah, pretty much. It was pretty much down the line. Yeah, it was.
Man.
It was very much more in the sort of vein of a commercial you'd see for 24 than for, like, Shaun of the Dead.
Well, that's really it is, though. It's trying to be, like, 24 times a billion.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
24 billion.
I said in my impressions, 24 on an Independence Day scale, but it's just like a made-for-TV movie.
It's just like, hey, that bear, he's looking at me funny. I'm going to wrestle him in the back of this pickup truck going 60 miles an hour while running away from a tsunami. It's like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I mean, I think it would have been nicer if it was more of a total outright pastiche of those movies rather than like a kind of earnest homage. It might have been easier to market then, and obviously it wouldn't have really affected the gameplay, but looking pretty bleak, or I should say it was looking pretty bleak until James single-handedly pulled it out of the fire.
Yeah, the amazing thing is I was trying to eat dinner while I was listening to it play back, and I'm just dying because I'm like, I need to go back and add an explosion to the bear. Because that makes sense. And so I went back and reverbed an explosion sound effect enough times so it sounded like the bear blew up. From me wrestling it. Me wrestling the bear, causing it to blow up. That was just perfect.
I know this is pretty much the one, considering it's even out in Europe and it's Disaster Day of Crisis, but there are others. But that kind of rounds out the first party published Wii stuff. But there's actually a lot of third party stuff in Japan, really notable stuff. Some of it, you know, I don't know how good it is because obviously we haven't really got to play this, or there's very limited, or it's came out very recently, so there's limited feedback from import reviews and stuff. But the first thing I've got is the Konoha Daughter Phantom Isle remake. That was announced. Was it announced at that fall press conference before TGS?
I think so.
Like everything else?
There was a lot of stuff.
Yeah, so this is just a remake of that PS1 platformer that I know Johnny spoke very well of.
Yeah, it's highly regarded.
It's even a great
people
game.
Who don't have terrible tastes like Magic the Gathering games.
Oh, getting the dig in, I suppose he had to, really.
Yeah.
He is not hit. But, yeah, I mean, so it's kind of nice. You have very sort of traditional game. It's got, you know, it's the same 2.5D style, but obviously, you know, with a much nicer sort of sheen that the PS1 could provide. Haven't heard anything specific about this for the West yet, really. There was one kind of hint that because they I don't know whether you saw this, that they had like a survey where they had an alternate character design that was I think the Kotaku referred to it as Poochied.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, the Simpsons reference. You know, and so basically, the suggestion would be they are considering it for an American release because they're considering changing the character and giving him a little more tewed, as the kids say.
Oh, Jesus.
For the Western audience.
Nice. I do love how Japan just like, yeah, we need to give this guy a backwards hat. That'll sell it in the U.S.
Well, it's like the Kirby thing, though, isn't it? It's like the famous Kirby...
Yes, with the eyes, the glaring down,
yeah, he's always
face.
Angry on the US cover or whatever, you know, he's tuned it
well,
up.
Well, son of a bitch serene. Stole his cake, you better believe he's angry.
Yeah, well, he's all serene and happy. And,
yeah, you know, I mean, would you be happy if some fucker came and stole your cake? No, you wouldn't be happy.
Yeah.
You'd be like, what the fuck, I was going to eat that cake. I think the American cover is the right one, and the Japanese cover, they changed it because they were afraid that the anger would upset Japanese patrons.
Yeah, well, to get him to look like that on the Japanese cover, they just shot him full of morphine. He's naturally like he is on the American cover.
There's a reason he doesn't talk in Kirby, whatever they called that show. It's because they had to bleep everything he said out. I have never seen a TV show where the main character doesn't have any dialogue. It's amazing.
So what you say, if they was going to do a faithful adaptation of what Kirby's like in real life, he'd be voice acted by Joe Pesci. Is what you're telling me?
Yeah, that's it. I was actually thinking by my Ray persona that we just had earlier.
So yeah, I mean that seems like it'd be a pretty good game, considering the original was a good game. This is a pretty straight up remake, I think, for the most part, although I think there are some enhancements. But nothing yet on a, I assume, you know, given that inclination that about the it seems like it would come out sometime next year, hopefully. But there's some talk about a European launch in July, but that's like totally unsubstantiated, so we don't know. Next one is Bleach versus Crusade, now published by Sega, developed by Treasure, like the DS games.
Yes.
I mean, normally, this is like an arena 3D fighting game, so it's quite a lot like Castlevania Judgment.
Oh, good. Way to set the standard high.
Yeah, that doesn't sound too good, but this is developed by Treasure, so I'm far,
because Treasure's
more.
Never made a bad game.
That's true. They have made some poor games, and they've made some poor. Their licensed games are kind of hit and miss. I think they've made some really good licensed games, like Astro Boy.
Yeah,
obviously, fantastic.
And they've made
and apparently the DS Bleach Fighters are very good. I've never played them, but they've gotten really good. Yeah, they've gotten good reviews and things. So this is a bit different, you know, because it is like an arena type fighting game stuff, and it looks fairly good. It's got, you know, it's the cell-shaded styles you might expect for an anime licensed game. And it uses the classic controls. So I think that's probably for the best, that they're just not even trying to push it with a gimmick or anything like that. And I guess we should expect to get this, because it is, all of the other Bleach games have been localized.
Yeah, I would imagine the series is pretty popular here. It's licensed and all that, so I can't imagine it not coming.
Yeah, and of course, I guess the other ones have been... The DS ones have been on a pretty significant delay of like several months to a year, possibly to do with the continuity with the anime. I don't really know about that, but I mean, that could be a factor. So it could be a similar thing. You might see it towards the end of next year, possibly, or in the middle. Whether it's a good game or not, I don't know. I mean, it'll have online, again, like Judgment. I know some people like Judgment.
Yeah, I've heard some people. Good things about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then other people think it's terrible.
With
this, like I said, there's a little more reason to be confident because Treasure behind it, but yes, they aren't infallible, as James pointed out. The next one is Tatsunoko versus Capcom. This is, as you might expect, a continuation of Capcom versus series, which used to have like Marvel versus Capcom, I guess, was probably the high point of that. You had X-Men versus Street Fighter before that, right?
Yeah.
Was like the first one, I think.
Yep.
And then on GameCube, you had the SNK versus Capcom stuff, didn't you?
Yeah, yep.
Obviously, like the Tatsunoko part is where things kind of get problematic for bringing it over to the West, because that's a sort of legendary anime production company in Japan.
Yeah, right.
A few of the properties are kind of known outside, like Gatchaman is known as Battle of the Planets or G-Force, like depending on which localized version you saw, like either in the 70s or the 80s or even the 90s. I think there was a bunch of different sort of versions of it.
Right.
But other than that, not many of the properties are famous.
Speed Racer, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I think Speed Race as well.
What about stuff like Mospita and Macross, stuff like that?
Oh, Macross is going to be a nightmare to deal with because Macross is tied up in like 8 different licenses.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, that's the problem. It's not just that it's sort of obscure and would people care, but the fact that you have lots of different license holders to deal with, so it's just too much trouble.
Well, no, I mean, just for Macross, there's like 8 different licenses. Because
Because
there's...
So in that regard, it's just too much trouble. And, so you immediately think it's probably not going to come in its current form. So, I mean...
So what would they replace it with? Capcom versus... Nintendo? What do you
I read a piece about saying that it might be used for Marvel vs. Capcom 3. It was obviously not based on any sort of facts or anything, just kind of looking at the situation, but it seemed pretty viable considering the situation. That's the thing.
I mean, it doesn't seem like it necessarily be that difficult. I know the community guy over there, the Christian Svensson, said there's kind of multiple ways it could go, and right now what they are saying is that there's a chance, I guess, because they're not outright saying it's not coming, we have no plans,
right?
And they seem to think that maybe something could develop in the next several months, so maybe they're looking at the possibilities for getting an alternate license and creating a sort of localized version that way. But as for the game itself, it's only just come out, so there isn't a lot of feedback on it yet. Some people played it at TGS and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And seemed to think it was pretty good. Apparently it's been a little simplified from the old Versus games. Like, instead of, like, the 6 buttons with, like, kicks and punches and the various intensities, you've now just got 3 buttons for attacks. So kind of the kicks and punches have been collapsed into each other.
Yeah, I think I read the Famitsu review. The Famitsu review is kind of... I don't even know how to say this, but it was almost like a respect review where...
Yeah, see, the Famitsu reviews I find entirely uninformative.
Yeah.
There's nothing to be drawn from because a 5 is a 0, and, like, and then with Nintendo games or other, like, highly respected properties, you know they're gonna... you'd have to pry, like,
it's a like,
7.
It's like the backwards edge.
Right.
Yeah,
if Ed sees a Nintendo property, they go red immediately and go like 2.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, not always, but yeah. I mean, the point is sometimes Edge sort of make a point of scoring something lower than you might think to sort of to communicate something. Whereas with Famitsu, that's pretty much the last thing they do. But yeah, so I know what you mean. It kind of seemed like a sort of yes, this is pretty good.
Yeah, it was like wishy-washy. They didn't really say much about it, and they kind of alluded to some broken aspects of the game.
It's somewhat slower than Marvel vs. Capcom 2, but apparently that was crazy fast. So.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. That game was ridiculous.
Game's awesome.
And what this does is uses 3D graphics, but with a cel-shaded style to kind of emulate that look.
Right.
The sort of hand-drawn look, but it is actually 3D graphics. So apparently it looks pretty good. I mean, it's far more informative than the Famitsu review, some of the impressions from TGS and stuff. And
yeah.
I know James Milkey from 1UP had some pretty positive things to say. He seemed to think it was pretty good. And I guess it's an interesting alternative for Wii owners, whereas you got Street Fighter 2 HD Remix and Street Fighter 3 will be coming out for the HD consoles, and they're probably a bit more sort of, hardcore-ish, if you want to put it that way. This might be a little sort of more quirky and fun and stuff, but it seems like it could. I guess the other thing is, would it sell in the West, regardless, even if it had a good license? Do you think
Verse series is pretty niche. I don't know,
especially with that license. I mean,
yeah, but I mean, even if they had, even if it was like Marvel versus Capcom 3 in the West, hypothetically. With the user base the way it is, do you think there's even a market for it, really? I mean, even though you might say it's not that different from something like Smash Brothers, which sold so well, but it's different enough.
I think it depends on exclusivity. If it was exclusive to Wii and it was like Marvel versus Capcom 3, you would draw fans, I think, across any platform. But I don't know if that would happen.
I think if it was maybe priced a little bit lower, like I look at it kind of the same as I look at like something like Metal Slug. There's definitely a cult fan base for that out there, but I don't know if they'll necessarily pay like the full $50 price for it. But
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. There's a lot of sort of hurdles to clear, I think, with this one for getting it to the West. So that's why certainly wouldn't expect it that soon, and perhaps not at all. But, I mean, it's kind of cool to have something because, obviously, with the classic controller now, there is much more of a capacity to have a kind of fighting game that plays pretty well without buying an arcade stick.
Yeah.
For Wii. So it's, that's it, rather than GameCube, but whether we'll see it is another matter. The next game we've got is Skycrawlers Innocent Aces.
Innocent Aces.
Innocent Aces. I assume just the Innocent like Aces bit. So Skycrawlers is just this anime movie about, like, you know, something like dogfights for entertainment or something.
Yeah, it's an alternate history with bizarre-ass dogfighting planes.
Yeah. So, but anyway, I think the reason why they've crowbarred in the Innocent Aces subtitle is to infer the fact that this is basically an Ace Combat game, which it is, because it's made by Namco's Project Aces team. And I guess, James, are you thoroughly excited by the idea of this? Are you quite happy with actually having Ace Combat 6?
Well, I am quite happy with Ace Combat 6, but I would like this game to come out too, because, I mean, there's only so many dozen times I can beat Ace Combat 6 before I know where every fighter plan is going to spawn from. But, you know, it would be nice to have this kind of game just to expose the Wii to it, because there's not a lot there.
Sure.
But I've heard some not-so-great things about the controls.
Yeah, no, there was an import review that I read from a British publication that were very, very disparaging about the motion controls. Basically said they're pretty bad. And I mean, apparently, like, graphically, it's pretty similar to PS2 Ace Combat, basically. Yeah, I guess as you might expect, but they haven't necessarily done anything particularly sort of special in that area. And then the main thing is you can just plug in your controller and your GameCube controller, or plug a classic controller, and just play it the old way.
Yeah.
So, I mean, sort of a bit like, you know, Castlevania Judgment or whatever. It's like you've got the motion controls in there, but you don't have to deal with them. So
don't compare things to Castlevania Judgment.
I'm just saying, you know, where people feel the need to have a motion control scheme, and it's kind of ostensibly the primary one, but it isn't really, because it's just like, yeah, actually this works better.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I mean, I'm excited in that it's another game by these people, which is which is, you know, it's like saying, well, you excited when another game from whoever your favorite development house comes out is? Well, yeah. And maybe not particularly for that game, but because they're making it, I'll you know, it should be good.
Well, you at least want to see what they can do.
Right.
I guess, I mean, again, the problem you've got here is the whole issue of, you know, this Japanese anime license.
Yeah.
And again, like, you know, would they sort of just, like, kind of pretend it doesn't exist?
Well,
and just
see, here's the advantage. If this movie comes out in the U.S. and sells reasonably well, it's a single license as opposed to a series, you know, a manga, an anime, a movie. There's one license to deal with, and there's one license holder. And then Namco can just sort of, you know, sell it off to the license holder. Okay, here's the...
But, you know, I guess the point being that, you know, certainly it'd be far more incumbent upon them in terms of squeezing what sales they can out of this to actually just, you know, go and straight flat out call it Ace Combat Wii, basically.
Yeah, because,
you know,
it's not Ace Combat, and there are some serious differences.
Right, okay.
Yeah, because it's,
so, I mean, could they kind of brand it as like an Ace Combat spin-off or something?
Maybe,
like,
but you know, the Ace Combat franchise is so ridiculously serious, like, to the point of it's just preposterous. And you know, maybe if that was toned down a little bit.
Yeah, I guess again, it's kind of similar to the, maybe, I mean, maybe they kind of positioned it as a slightly more accessible, you know, kind of game. With this license in Japan, and kind of, I don't know, I'd definitely, as you said, just because it's not as much of a tangled web of licenses, it's more likely than Tatsunoko versus Capcom, at least in its present form, to come over. But again, I don't think it's necessarily that likely. And the last one, I guess we saved the best for last, maybe, is Let's Tap, the epic penguin game or whatever from Yuji Naka's Probe, is it?
Yes.
Probe?
What? Oh, sorry.
And, oh, we do have, once again, bad news in that they have changed the music on the website.
They've changed the music on the website, but on everybody's Nintendo channel, the Japanese one, if you watch like the commercial they just uploaded, like most recently, it uses the music.
Oh, good. I mean, it should be the only song in the game.
It's the anthem of a generation.
They haven't retired the music.
Like that song
should
be the only noise in the game. Should be that game.
Absolutely.
I know it's a rhythm game, but fuck, who needs noise if that's playing?
It makes me happy when I'm feeling blue.
Yeah. All
right.
Me too.
Yeah, I mean, this is a really weird game, obviously, like with the whole putting it, you just put the Wii Remote on a box and tap, like, in one direction or another or whatever, you know, and you get all these kind of, I guess they're like mini games, really. Like, you've just got a bunch of different stuff that plays on this concept of how you interact with it. And some of them apparently are more like just like visualizations. They're not really a game there so much as it's
which
like
is how penguins
toy.
Could play it in that no one can actually play it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's like it's more of a visual toy than it is that you kind of interact with, but it doesn't necessarily have goals and stuff. But then some of them do. Some of them so there are actual games in there too. So it's pretty bizarre. I mean, it's got to be a bit of a tough sell in the West. I mean, what do you think?
I think it'll come over though. I think so. I mean, it's the kind of game that anybody can play. So even though it is kind of quirky, I mean, I think that there's been other games like that have come over with little issue. I mean, I think something like Elite Beat Agents, I think like that's probably more complicated than this and probably even more of a harder sell.
I guess they could, but there's been no word yet. There's been no kind of even vague like inklings as far as I'm aware. That Sega are looking at bringing this over. I mean, Sega have been pretty proactive with the Wii, so they might. But, I mean, it'd be nice to see it, but because it's just so weird. I mean, it is just bizarre. I'd like to see that kind of thing come over. But not like in an unlocalizable kind of Captain Rainbow way, I guess is the big difference.
Yeah.
So in that sense, it's much more possible that it could actually come over. So, I mean, that's I guess you have to say that is a pretty big list of games. You know, that not all of them necessarily like really huge outstanding titles, but it certainly fills it out a lot nicer than what we had in the West. And I guess that's the thing. I mean, it's just I honestly believe that has to be some of the reason why this space was just left so befuddlingly empty. I don't know about you guys. How you feel. Yeah. I mean, Fatal Frame seems like especially like why didn't you bring that over? But to fill some of that gap.
Yeah, that would have fit perfect.
I think you're giving
Halloween.
Nintendo way too much credit on this one. I think it's just this just happened.
Well, I mean, I guess there is, I mean, there's always that. You have to say that there probably were, things that went wrong or something like that. You know, I mean, there certainly have been in the past. Look at Project Hammer. You know, that sort of completely disappeared into the void and presumably never to return. And obviously, I mean, disaster itself.
Enough said.
Clearly enough wasn't said.
Yeah,
that was a long and winding road. Well, I mean, we should say, for all the fun we made of it, you know, there were quite a lot of positive reviews when that came out in Europe. Quite a lot of people like it. I mean, you know, the first few hours that I played, I didn't care for very much. Especially the third-person action stuff is so plodding, and it just feels so superfluous.
Well, yeah. I'm making fun of the game, but at the same time, I admire it for what it tried to do.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people kind of, find it kind of appealing, and also, that I guess the thing is with the part of the game I played, it's the start slow. It's really slow.
Yeah. Well, you can't just jump into driving away from a volcano eruption while a bear is trying to maul you.
I really don't think that it looks good for America, because you have to say, given that it was already localized and you had this kind of gap, if they didn't release it now in America, when will they?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it just looks pretty bleak. Well, on that suitably dismal note, we're going to close out this show. So I want to thank Nick for joining us this week.
Thanks for having me, guys.
And, of course, James and John, as usual, our dependable crew.
Always a pleasure.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Yep. And I guess Johnny will still not be back next week, but hopefully we will be, so we'll catch you then. Bye-bye, everybody.
See you later.
Bye.
Bye.